Committee. Good to have you here. Thank you. I am going to open a work session on Senate Bill 215. I'd like to let you know what my intentions are right now on this today. Don't intend to pass this bill out. I still remain, like you, very interested in the bill, but when we do this, we want to do it correctly. And we have a couple of things that we need to deal with. Number one, we have a section that will need to be removed ultimately, but we'd like to find out why. We'd like to get the official Ledge Council explanation. And also, we have some amendments out here as well, and if adopted, those amendments will superimpose themselves upon or intertwine themselves with the House rule that we adopted regarding the fundraising activities during session. And so I would like to wait until we also have Ramona Kennedy available to talk to us about House rule. But in the meantime, I'd like to go to Ted Rutlinger, please, from Legislative Council, and he will explain very briefly today for us the relationship of statute versus rule when you have things that either conflict or come very close to. And Councilman, thank you. Good to have you here. We appreciate it.
Thank you. For the record, Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office. As I understood your question, you wanted me to chat briefly about an amendment that would adopt a statutory reporting requirement that's different from or conflicts with a rule of the House. That raises a legal issue when you have a statute that conflicts directly with a rule of the House, because under Article 4, Section 11 of the Constitution, each House of the Legislative Assembly can set its own rules of proceeding. So in this case, as I understand it, the House has already adopted a rule that specifies what members of the House are supposed to do if they receive a contribution during the session. The other amendments that you may be considering address the same subject in a slightly different way and in a way that could be interpreted to be a conflict. The legal issue is which wins, the House rule or the statute. We think that it's likely that because you have specific constitutional authority to adopt your own rules of proceeding, that the House rule will win when the statutory provisions conflict with the provisions of the House rule. It seems pretty clear to me that you could adopt provisions that require you to do different things, but in the case where they conflict with each other, it seems to us that you can make a good argument that because of the constitutional authority, the rules adopted by the House will prevail.
Thank you. When we conversed a few moments ago on the phone, we talked about what would happen if we adopted 215 as is without the Dash 4 amendments. We would have not necessarily conflicting orders here, but we would have something that appears to work in concert to a certain degree. In Senate Bill 215, all you have here is a requirement that the Secretary of State signal within 2 days that individual has received, well, let me put it this way. You would have an office holder, office seeker, being required to report within 2 days. And then that would simply go into the next C&E. But the reporting requirement would be accelerated. 2 days it has to be made to the Secretary of State. That's really all that does. Then you have the House rule that says you have 7 days to make a determination on whether a contribution has been received or not. And then once that is done, within a business day, it would be required to notify the clerk of the House, who would then make that announcement at floor session. So in one way, it appears that 215 and the House rule, if let stand, would work in concert with one another. But at that point, you would have uneven requirements, obviously, between the House and Senate regarding fundraising during session. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, I think that's basically correct. I don't see that engrossed Senate Bill 215 conflicts with the House rule. The only tricky part might be the fact that the bill indicates that you have to file a statement with the Secretary of State not later than 2 business days after the contribution is received. And the House rule, of course, defines when you receive a contribution in a slightly different way, with the 7-day period. So it might be tricky for purposes of figuring out when things are received under the different requirements. As I understand the way the law is currently interpreted in Chapter 260, received means the day you get it, as opposed to the way that it's interpreted in the House rule. So aside from that issue, I think you're correct that you would have different requirements between the House and the Senate because the House has adopted that rule. And number two, it seems to me that this statutory piece and the rule could, in theory, work together and wouldn't directly conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Representative Devlin.
Two things. Recognizing that difference in the definition or the how the contribution would be considered received, I can't remember if it's in statute or if it's in rule. There is, I'm just going by memory here, there is something relative to, like in a normal reporting period, a candidate having 7 days within which to return a contribution. I don't know exactly where that comes from. But our problem is, as we get a conflict in this, is when we go to either the one-day reporting period under the rule, if we didn't have that provision also in the rule, or the two-day, which also, of course, doesn't have that provision in it. Do you know where that 7-day comes from? Personally, I've never returned a contribution. So.
Chair Representative. I don't know the answer to that one off the top of my head. I believe there's some provisions in Chapter 260 about the fact that your accounts have to be up to date within
7 days,
and perhaps the Elections Division can help me out on this.
And, Mr. Chairman, then there's a secondary issue, too, is if we, next week or whatever, passed this without the requirement for notification to the chief clerk, could our rule compel the Secretary of State's office to provide the report? I mean, without statutory authority. Even though our rule in law might supersede statute, could we actually compel, you know, another division of government to do something by rule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I'd say the answer to that is probably no, since the Constitution grants you the authority to adopt rules governing your own proceedings. And obviously you would be reaching into the executive branch of government to compel them to do something, and I doubt whether you could do that.
Mr. Chairman, so we would have to do that by statute if we chose to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, yes, I think the answer is yes.
Okay. Before we leave that subject, I just want to go on record as saying that I think we're all interested in passing this bill. Fortunately, the House is already under a stringent rule, and we're certainly comfortable with that. But yet, I think we all have a desire to pass this bill, but we want to make sure it looks right and is right. And I want to avoid passing something that causes a train wreck statutorily. So what I want to do is pull the players together in the early part of the week, and I'd like to get Legislative Council involved. I know Representative Devlin and myself would like to be involved. I'd like to bring in the Clerk of the House as we talk about how to coalesce this and come up with a statute that we can pass that is not going to lead to confusion. So in other words, we're going to do it, but we want to do it right, so I don't want to rush. Let's talk about another aspect here, and that would be Section 13 of Senate Bill 215. Could you briefly explain to us what our difficulty is with this as it now stands, and we'll develop it from there.
Mr. Chair, there are several issues involved in this section. The main one, I think, is a drafting error for which I need to take responsibility, which is that Section 13 is broader than the relating clause to this bill. In other words, it's outside the title. The title to this bill is Relating to Election Campaign Finance Statements, which worked just fine with the original bill. When this bill was amended in the Senate, I didn't catch the fact that this new provision, which basically is an attempt to grant people access to the Supreme Court to determine the constitutionality of 260-174, that, of course, doesn't really relate to election campaign finance statements. This whole bill, obviously, is the result of an attorney general's opinion, which indicated that 260-174 is unconstitutional. So, of course, people are interested in actually getting a court to address that, but the bottom line is provisions to do that don't really fit within the title of a bill that relates only to the statements. The title needs to be broader. It needs to be relating to elections or something else.
Thank you. What is the default position that a citizen would take if they want to follow this, Rob, if Section 13 were amended out fully?
Mr. Chair, if Section 13 is out of the bill, it would default into the normal practice, which in this case could be problematic. There's a provision in the election laws now which says that anybody who's aggrieved by an action or a failure to act by the Secretary of State can go to circuit court to address that. In this case, the Secretary of State is unlikely to be enforcing 260-174 on the advice of the Attorney General. So since they won't be enforcing it, it's hard to find anybody who's going to be aggrieved by the action or the inaction of the Secretary of State. In other words, if the Secretary of State fails to enforce the statute, if a member receives a contribution, the question is who would have any standing to get into court on that issue. It would be a very narrow group of people. You could allege that you as a citizen of the state have a public interest in enforcing the laws of the state. I doubt whether a court would accept that as a reason to confer standing. Somebody who is already an announced candidate who is running against a member of the Legislative Assembly who has accepted a contribution could in theory be somebody who is aggrieved and thereby have the opportunity to get into court. I suspect they would have to use some sort of a mandamus proceeding to get to the court. Clearly they couldn't under the status quo. It would be difficult to get straight to an appellate court. You would most likely have to start at the circuit court level, which is one thing that the proposed amendments do. But it's problematic to get there.
If one were to remedy that problem by doing something else statutorily, what would be the proper recommendation? I mean, if someone were really concerned about this section and wants to offer some kind of redress, what is the quickest path to that that the legislature can take?
Mr. Chair, obviously there's a bunch of policy considerations that go into that. The original approach was to attempt to go directly to the Supreme Court for in an attempt to get a ruling on constitutionality. We have pointed out that the original language still had some problems because the court, it seemed to us, could still say you don't have standing. There's no justiciable controversy here for us to consider. So as far as making it work best, at the risk of advocating a particular policy, it might be a better approach to start at the circuit court level and attempt to limit it only to circumstances where people have, where there is an actual aggrieved party, where there is an actual factual justiciable controversy for the court to look at. But as I said before, that's not necessarily an easy thing to do, given the fact that the statute will not be enforced.
All right, do we have any further questions? Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate your testimony. We will go to work on this. the longer we hold on to this, the more interesting it becomes. We keep hearing from people entering the fray as time goes on, and that's fine. But what I want to do is try to work to a close as quickly as possible. So we will commit to doing that, and I'll keep the committee informed as to progress there. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 215. Okay, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2093. And Kara, please.
Mr. Chair, members, you should have staff two amendments at your spot, and also a hand and girls staff two amendments. My understanding from Representative Close is she likes these amendments. We're not quite sure where Representative Close is this afternoon, but my understanding is she likes the dash twos better than the dash ones.
Okay. I don't like to rush you because I know the workload, and you've got the dash twos in front of you. And rather than just sit here and read these for the next 15 minutes to make sure we understand even the differences between the twos and the ones, I would rather just give you your homework to do that and come back and do it right. Okay. Any comments about that? Okay, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2093. Please take a look at those amendments, and it is my intention. I think this is a good idea to get something done on this soon. All right, any further discussion? Without that, please adjourn. Thank you.